Have you ever felt exhausted by your own life? Not just tired from work or obligations, but bone-deep weary from the relentless pressure to optimize, improve, and become a better version of yourself? We live in a culture that treats contentment as complacency and rest as laziness. From the moment we wake to curated Instagram feeds showcasing someone's perfect morning routine, we're bombarded with the message that we're falling behind. This collection of essays arrives like a glass of cold water in a desert of self-help platitudes, asking a question so simple it feels revolutionary. What if you're already enough? Our culture has built an entire economy on the premise that you're insufficient. Happiness isn't presented as something you cultivate internally, but as a product you purchase, a body you sculpt, a brand you build. The irony cuts deep. In our desperate pursuit of fulfillment, we've created more anxiety than ever before. These essays don't offer another five-step plan or productivity hack. Instead, they invite us to examine the water we're swimming in, to question whether the race we're running even has a finish line worth crossing. American culture treats happiness as a moral obligation. From childhood, we're surrounded by relentlessly cheerful imagery, smiling cartoons, upbeat jingles, adults insisting we look on the bright side. Sadness isn't just discouraged, it's pathologized as requiring immediate intervention. The modern internet perfects this enforced optimism. BuzzFeed's endless cute content and yellow LOL buttons create perpetual nowness that paradoxically generates anxiety. We toggle between micro-nostalgia and micro-trends, caught in a loop whispering, you're not happy enough, you need bigger distractions, time is running out. John Updike's Rabbit novels show how pop culture's trivial distractions dominate American consciousness. His protagonist experiences mortality through commercial jingles and TV snippets. By the final book, cultural trivia becomes indistinguishable from life events. Disasters feel like gimmicks, similar to football timeouts. When everything is forced into a jolly shape, everything feels more mournful. We've lost the ability to experience the full spectrum of emotions that make us human. Disneyland represents commercialized happiness, a mandatory pilgrimage despite absurd costs and exhausting crowds. After navigating packed parking, endless lines, and mediocre rides, no well-being materializes. Instead, you've inducted your children into the tyrannically cheerful cult of consumer culture, where joy itself has been commodified and packaged for sale. Walt Disney originally created his park as nostalgic passage to small-town America. That vision has expired. As J.G. Ballard noted in 1983, the American dream no longer supplies the world with its images, its dreams, its fantasies. It supplies the world with its nightmares now. The experience treats visitors as passive consumers, loading into vehicles, sitting on curbs, filing into viewing areas. This mirrors corporate evolution. Visionary entrepreneurs create something guided by idealistic values, then inevitably pursue aggressive growth and world domination. Despite rhetoric about connecting people and putting customers first, these companies now primarily mine our personal data. We've gone from lamenting insipid cultural artifacts to exalting them. Being on brand is now high praise. We've traded personal agency for safe fantasy, yet ended up in a world louder and more dangerous than anticipated. Our market-driven mindset has infiltrated intimacy, transforming dating into competitive sport, where partners become commodities. Mad Men's Don Draper embodies this, manipulating his way upward while flinching at the cost. Like Gatsby, he possessed heightened sensitivity to the promises of life, yet as his surroundings grew opulent, satisfaction diminished proportionally. 50 Shades of Grey pushes this further with Christian Grey embodying the American dream. Simultaneously, mean daddy, supervillain, and Gordon Gekko wielding limitless will to commodification where anyone can be purchased. The danger lies in its inability to recognize the pathology at its heart, where possession becomes religion. He is mine, Anastasia repeats. This mirrors our cultural DNA, where wealth and ego-driven restlessness fuel constant titillation, never-ending foreplay with more that never reaches satisfaction. As philosopher Alan Watts notes, when the outcome of a game is certain, we call it quits and begin another. Relationships become performances rather than authentic connections, constantly rearranging the furniture of our lives for an audience that may never truly see us. The foodie movement has brought us to the dystopian shores of gross overconsumption, transforming sustenance into luxury. While slow food and locavore movements claim ethical superiority, they've deepened class divisions. Farmers markets selling $8 heirloom tomatoes reveal how ethical eating has become a wealthy privilege. Blue apron boxes epitomize how mere commoners now feast like kings and queens, yet individual plastic packaging creates environmental waste while promoting the illusion of chef-quality cooking. Factory farming produces 99% of America's meat, with chickens bred to grow so rapidly their legs break under their own weight. As population approaches 11 billion, we'll need industrial farming yields. We must address environmental recklessness rather than simply choosing organic. This overconsumption extends beyond food. Marie Kondo's philosophy offers a revolutionary message. Most possessions are pointless, unnecessary, and burdensome. The average American home contains over 300,000 items. A deceased loved one's wallet holding just $26 evokes mono no aware, melancholic awareness of the transience of existence, reminding us that all of heaven is within you, not in accumulated things. The Sopranos revolutionized television with a mob boss in therapy. Despite Tony's terrible acts, audiences empathized with his college tours, manipulative mother, and panic attacks. Yet creator David Chase never let us forget Tony's fundamental immorality. His selfishness, rage, and greed always prevailed. Ironically, Chase's morality play backfired. Viewers embraced these villains, hoping for their happy endings. This moral relativism intensified in Billions, where Bobby Axelrod's unethical behavior is celebrated as strength. Similar worship emerged around Walter White and Frank Underwood. American exceptionalism has curdled into survivalist brutality. Our narratives frame life as dominate or be dominated, with mercilessness as prerequisite. Reality TV normalized this through The Apprentice's glorification of cutthroat tactics. As filmmaker Louis Theroux noted about Trump, refusing shame gives enormous power in our shame culture. The villains we glorified on screen have invaded reality. Tech billionaires embrace disruption that destroys communities. Corporate leaders celebrate layoffs as optimization. By sympathizing with merciless men, we've redefined power itself, creating a culture viewing empathy as weakness and cruelty as strength. When gurus outnumber teachers or artists, the world has lost its footing. The guru seduces with poetic self-actualization while highlighting your shortcomings, suggesting you haven't arrived yet, that you deserve your failures, and that controlling everything will lead to your best life, an implicit rejection of your current one. These gurus aren't experts in happiness, though they play them online. They champion the self while denying systemic oppression. Their life hacks often exploit others' resources, perfect for those with demographic advantages and enough self-loathing to prioritize supremacy. The artist stands opposite, embracing reality's dirt and grime, leaning into disappointments and rage. While the guru asks, "What would this look like if it were easy?" the artist knows meaningful creation requires honesty, vulnerability, and engagement with injustice. Commercial messages have replaced real connection, convincing us everything valuable exists outside ourselves. The antidote is reconnecting with our humanity, fragile, fallible, constantly humbled. Even in imperfect circumstances, sustenance and grace exist. Like Mozart, we must have faith in our gifts, peculiarities, flaws, and capacity to love. Resist viewing yourself as consumer or commodity. The goal isn't perfection, it's presence. breathing in this imperfect moment and saying, it is enough.